Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Prince, and I am the host of the Once Bitten podcast. This is a podcast focused on Bitcoin. It's my mission to interview as many people as I can around the different aspects of Bitcoin and help people understand exactly what Bitcoin could mean for them and for their families and for their future. I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you so much for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Once Bitten podcast. Joining me today is George Rischel, who is going to carry on what I've started, a little 3, 4, or 5-part series, not sure yet how long it's going to go, but Stolen Science, and this is the second part following this theme after having Ray Youssef on for part one, where we talked about many, many different things. Today, we're going to talk about Wilhelm Reich and Orgone Energy and George's work and what he's been doing to organize Africa. And what is Orgone? What was Reich's work? How did George fall into this rabbit hole? And how did he find Bitcoin a long time ago? Plus, you can buy Orgonite from George on his website all across Europe and across Africa using Bitcoin as well. So get over there once you've listened to this and get yourself some of these pieces. Stolen Science 3 is going to be carrying on this theme. And this all ties in as well with what you've been seeing in the skies, the lines in the skies, and how you can protect yourself against whatever is being sprayed above our heads. There are many theories out there. We go into some of them here, and I'll be following on those with another podcast, Stolen Science Part 3. Anyway, sit back and enjoy this one. Big shout out to the show sponsors. We got a new one here, OnRamp. I've been doing a little read in the last couple of shows. Go back and listen to episode number 413 with Jesse Myers. That is Croesus BTC. He's been in the Bitcoin space a long time writing about Bitcoin. He's co-founded this company, OnRamp. And this is what they do. It's a new multi-sig setup. It's a new service for you to check out. So make sure you get over to onramp.com. Use the code BITTEN, let them know I sent you, and you will get $250 off if you decide to go ahead. But you've got to gain peace of mind with OnRamp and their multi-institution custody solution. The way it works is they will create a dedicated multi-sig vault just for you. Three separate institutions each hold a key. One will be OnRamp, one will be BitGo, and one will be CoinCover, but none of those guys can move funds unilaterally. Instead, only you have control over your coins. So this is another multi-sig option that you have now at your disposal. If you're losing sleep over losing some of your stack, then this is definitely worth your time to go check out. Jesse's been in the space for a long time, as you know. So tell him I sent you. OnRampBitcoin.com. Use the code BITTEN and go do your own research. Big shout out as well to Swan Bitcoin, where you can stack sats. If you are across there in the US, they will be on the phone to you, help you on your rabbit hole journey. And, you know, it's for everybody, from the discerning pleb to the high net worth individual. Same for Relay here in Europe, RELAI.ch. Use the code BITTEN when you download these apps and you will save commission in the case of Relay. And you can be stacking up to 1,000 Swiss per day, or equivalent, obviously, in under 5 minutes. It's a self-custodial wallet built into the app with Lightning enabled as well, currently in beta. So there's no excuse for you to not be using these tools. Make sure you're taking cold storage. Bitbox O2 is a Bitcoin-only hardware wallet, packed full of features, including coin control, which is a really neat feature. Every time you are signing a UTXO, you can go and choose which UTXO you want to use, so you're not giving away too much privacy. Rather than sending one huge UTXO, you can send the UTXO that is going to be as close to that amount as possible. Obviously, you will have some dust coming back, but manage that as well. Consolidate your UTXOs. If you don't know what that means, don't worry. Don't get in over your head. There is plenty of time for you to learn. You can go back and find an episode I did with Daz from BTC Advisor, and you can hit that link in the show notes as well to speak to any of these guys who are going to help you out on your journey. Bitcoin Advisor, link in the show notes. Tell them I sent you, and you'll get a discount. pretty much the theme of this podcast. Use the code BITTEN wherever you can. Plan B, look out for more work coming from these guys. They've just finished the summer school in Lugano. Looked absolutely epic. Giacomo and the team over there doing great work. And we're going to have the conference coming up back end of October as well. Join Orange Pill App if you have not already, because this is the best place for you to stay up to date with what is going on in and around your local area and to get out and meet some plebs. And check out zapright.com/bitten for an accounting and invoicing platform on Bitcoin for your company, your service, made by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. Meanwhile, enjoy this rip with George. George, okay. We're here with George Rischel, ladies and gentlemen, and we are going to go down some incredibly interesting rabbit holes. I've been deep down George's book here.
All right.
Yes, Operation Paradise, which is a great book. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for all of the information and everything in that.
It's already 13, no. It was written in 2007, so it's actually quite old already.
And you've got lots of stories in there from the early 2000s of your adventures.
Yes.
We're going to educate people about. But first of all, Lauren is going to throw this wide open with the first question, and let's see where we go.
How do the crystals emit the energy? Emits the right word, right?
Yeah.
Okay, emit the energy.
Okay. Now that is kind of three steps ahead, because the thing that we are making is called orgonite, okay? And orgonite is actually not really about crystals. It is a mixture of resin and metal filings, and the crystals have been added later in order to sort of harmonize or strengthen or make the energy more coherent, you know. So the original orgonite was invented by a guy called Carl Welz, an Austrian-American guy who played around with basically this mixture of resin and metal filings without any crystals whatsoever. Okay, I keep saying that because somehow since the New Agers have taken charge of the orgonite movement or try to take it over, they're talking all about crystals and all about the secondary stuff. Okay, and it's actually wrong. Okay, sometimes they're making beautiful pyramids with only beautiful crystals in them and not a single metal filing. And I keep saying, guys, this is not orgonite. You may love it. You may think it's beautiful. It has nothing to do with orgonite. It's just crystals in resin, okay? You could also have butterflies in resin or flower petals or something like that, you know? It's purely decorative. Okay, so the crystals are actually secondary. They are more like, you could say, the added information that is modulated on top of the raw energy that the orgonite produces. Okay. But now we've jumped right into the middle of it. And I think your viewers don't even know what orgonite is and what we're even talking about.
No, not yet. But that's the beauty.
But you get there, obviously.
Yeah. Which we will.
It's a great question, but it's kind of like you know, starting to groom the horse from the tail and
Well, we are going to go, and I'm going to get the listeners up to speed with all of this, because I want to take it step by step, because it is fascinating stuff, and we'll get back into the history of everything as well. But thank you for actually, do you want to show George some of the things that you have here?
Definitely. All right,
hold up whatever you want. Like let's see what we have. Special. Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is proper orgonite, I would say. But it's not one of ours, I know that.
No, it's not. Yeah, and then hold that up. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's a quartz crystal with some amethyst in it, I think.
Yeah. And then we did just a chunk of amethyst as well.
Nice.
Through your work, actually, George, you've kind of formed a new little family hobby, actually, because we can buy these. There's just a little shop down in our local town here that has absolutely everything. It doesn't have the orgonites. Okay. But it has all the stones and
That's
crystals
lovely.
and the pyrite. We've got a little bit of pyrite here as well. We've got
That's
that square block.
excellent.
That's a bloodstone. And yeah, it's interesting. We're really
Or you could make your own orgonite. If you have such a nice crystal shop around the corner, you could start making your own orgonite.
that's the next step because I know all we need now are the metal filings and the resin and a mold. We could just use a muffin tin or something.
We use, I mean, for our simple tower busters that we use to neutralize the negative energies from cell phone towers, we use muffin pans. Simple. Simple muffin pan. And you can actually use quartz breakage. You know, it doesn't have to be super nice, double terminated, clear optical grade quartz. You can actually pick up the white quartz that you find at the on the mountains, you know, and I don't know what kind of geology you have there, but in a lot of areas you find opaque quartz that's not transparent, but it's doing the job for these simple tower busters.
We've got to start from the beginning here, right? Lauren, thank you very much for your question.
Bye.
Thank you. Okay, so
So where in France are you
we
actually?
are in the Dordogne region, so it's kind of
Okay.
southwest.
I've passed through there once or twice. It's kind of a nice rural area with nice little restaurants
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah, we're very close to the Lascaux Caves, where you have
oh
very
yeah.
old
Right.
paintings. A lot of history here, prehistory, settlers for, we're going all the way back to, people walking around and in quite well cave dwellings, and there's troglodyte caves as well here that are preserved. So yeah, man has been attracted to this part of the world for many millennia. George, let's back up and find out what we're doing here about this conversation. And this conversation is taking place because of the rabbit hole that I've been pulled into, primarily by a couple of other friends of mine. And as you well know, Bitcoiners like to investigate these kinds of things. And it was incredible to find your website, and incredible to know that you accept Bitcoin and that you've already figured out that the monetary system is just one of the many things either broken or working perfectly as designed in our society.
Depends on which side of the parasitic relation you stand.
Exactly. And in your book, you talk about the secrets of the Federal Reserve right at the beginning, and Eustace Mullins and that book.
know, my path has been actually informed by two early exposures, and one was the exposure to Dr. Wilhelm Reich and the whole idea of orgone energy, which I read almost all of his important books as a teenager, because I was kind of, an unbalanced teenager trying to find out what's wrong with me, and I got very interested in psychoanalysis and psychology and all these things, and kind of progressed from Sigmund Freud to Wilhelm Reich and mostly Wilhelm Reich as a sexual liberator, and I didn't even take his organ part so very serious, but I was already aware of it. At that time, I thought maybe he got a bit crazy when he got older, or something. And that kind of only connected a lot later. And then I came across certain anomalies of the financial world. And that started my whole journey of calling, of let's call it becoming a conspiracy theorist, or as we now say, pattern recognitionist. Because obviously, a conspiracy theorist is a negative framing that was actually created by the CIA after murdering John F. Kennedy in order to disqualify all the people who thought that the whole story didn't make sense. So, for me, My inquiry in how the world really runs started by a naive trip to the local library. I was already in South Africa then, where I tried to find out what is money. Okay. So I went to the keyword catalog. It was still with little cards, you know, it wasn't digital yet. So we are talking about 1998, 1999, something like that. And you had these drawers, you know, with keyword indexes and what have you. And I found lots of books, and they were all about how to manage money, you know, how to get rich, how to run an economy, like Keynesian approach and what, you know, all kinds of, basically, but nobody actually wanted to explain how money is being brought into existence. Okay, and that's where Eustache Mullins came in, and somehow at the same time, the internet started, and now we're talking dial-up modems, okay? We're talking, you know, those things, 56 baud or something, that made these funny noises, bing, and then you were connected and you paid per minute. You know, it was like, what? So that's where suddenly a lot of information became available, and I came across that book and ordered it, I think even from Amazon. And that was a big eye opener. That was actually the start of connecting the dots for me. And that's also why from the beginning, I've always been interested in Bitcoin. The sad part is that Bitcoins went through my hands in the early days when they were like 63 cents a piece, you know, and
we all have similar stories.
And I took them in as payment for the things that we were making and sold them on for cash because I needed the cash, you know, and I had no idea what this would become. So it's very sad in that sense, you know. So now I have a very small stack, which is far from one Bitcoin. I think it's 0.3 or something like that. And I'm hoping that it might pop out soon, but it's going sideways most of the time.
Well, hopefully after this episode, the fact what we're going to talk about and what you're going to uncover and the fact that you sell your organites and many other things on your shop for Bitcoin, hoping Bitcoiners are going to assemble and start going out and busting these 5G towers and everything that we're going to talk about here.
Yeah, because we are part of a bigger freedom movement, you know. That's I think that's what we have in common.
Oh yeah. What once you see what's going on, you can't unsee it, and you want to do everything that you can to fix it. So if I come back to Reich and Freud, and you as a teenager, you said you were trying to figure out what was wrong with you. Who was telling you that you had anything wrong with you, or did you feel just?
It was just an awkward feeling. I think many teenagers have that, you know, so I kind of went. I was a bit premature in my inquiry, so I was kind of totally onto this stuff when I was about 15.
Wow.
So I went from wanting to become a locomotive driver to wanting to become a psychoanalyst. You know?
Did your friends and teachers think you were going like completely crazy?
No, they loved it because I was able to kind of do like a impromptu lecture on Sigmund Freud and his theory of the subconscious and what have you. You know, I wouldn't even be able to repeat that nowadays. But they kind of, I don't know, they found it interesting or something. You know, it was a different time. It was, I mean, 1970s. I went to high school in 1970s.
Yeah.
When I think we were much freer in a way.
Yes.
I think it was probably one of the freest periods in human history.
Yes, the 1970s. I'm going to take a wild stab in the dark and say it all started going to shit right around 1971.
Yes,
And
Of course, when Nixon went off the road center, obviously.
Absolutely. And if you haven't just seen the website, What the Fuck Happened in 1971, definitely check it out. Mm-hmm. I'll send you the link afterwards. And for anybody listening who hasn't seen it, you know, it's all there in graph form, and you can see just the downfall of society basically ever since we come off the gold standard, what was left of it. But I've been digging into Wilhelm Reich, and a lot of people they wouldn't have heard of him. They wouldn't have known anything about him. And yes, his work was heavily influenced by Freud. He studied under Freud as a protege, I guess, for many years. And I've been actually listening to the book.
Actually, he didn't study. He was an assistant. He was a scientific assistant. So in terms of the university system, he was never his student, but he was part of his staff for a few
and
years.
I've just been listening to the book, Wilhelm Reich and the Function of the Orgasm. So this would have been his early work and something that you talked about earlier.
Actually called the function. It's actually called The Function of the Orgasm, and that was the one that interested me in 19 when I was 14 years old, of course.
And, because we shouldn't be repressing sexual urges as young. There you
absolutely,
go.
Absolutely, yes, right. Exactly. And then the discovery of the orgon was the kind of weird second part in that book.
So as I understand it, by studying deep emotion, because he was an excellent child psychologist as well, psychologist in general, but by studying, that was his thing, right? He wanted to kind of understand like the energy, what was that energy that was like attached with like an orgasm, and that led him to orgone energy, is that kind of, or ethereal energy?
You see, when you go from Freud had already this idea that in early childhood we are by education and traumatization we are suppressing our original sexual impulses, and then we create suppression mechanisms which are later leading to us becoming neurotic people, okay, who are sort of acting out old patterns that we don't understand where they're coming from. So that was basically the Freudian idea. Now, Wilhelm Reich in the 1930s started going more physical. So when a person under Sigmund Freud, he would lie under the couch on the couch, and Freud would ask him question, and then he would you know, try to associate things and bring up old memories and so on and so on, and they try to come to that what they used to call the primal scene where shit happened, you know, and what have you. And Wilhelm Reich said, no, okay, I believe that this suppression mechanism is actually a body, a permanent contraction of muscles, okay? Like he called it the body armor. And he started treating people with breast work and breast therapy and targeted massage and loosening of certain muscle groups in order to actually make them relive the emotion that was sort of pent up, you know, under that, what he called the armor, okay, the body armor. So that was kind of Reich in the 1930s. And then Nazi Germany happened, and he was Jewish, Austrian Jewish. He went to various European countries, Norway, and eventually came to the United States. Okay. And then in the States, he started this whole organs thing, because the interesting thing about Wilhelm Reich is that he was an intensely curious person, somebody who could not be stopped or limited by, for example, we have this compartmentalization in sciences where you say, if you are a doctor, you are astrophysicist, you are a human geneticist, or you are a paleontologist or whatever, you know, and you're supposed to not pronounce anything that is outside your box. So Wilhelm Reich did not care for that stuff, you know, and He started doing experiments with cancer patients, and he found that when he looked at their blood in under a very high resolution microscope, that they had these T cells that were kind of looking grayish and blackish, and they had very few so a healthy person had blue luminescence around her T cells, whereas a cancer patient, they were looking dull and gray. Okay. That was also owed to the fact that in the 1940s, the optical microscopes reached a super peak of their development. And it was before electronic microscopes came into being. It's a very important part. Also connects back to the work of William Rife, about whom you may have heard. Royal Rife, sorry. Yeah. I see my memory is getting fuzzy. My wife is feeding me from the back here. Okay, Royal Rife. He was actually an inventor of a microscope that had a 40,000 optical magnification, which means on an optical microscope, you can look at living things without killing them. You can put a drop of blood on a glass disc, you know, and actually look at what's moving there. Whereas electron microscope gives you very high resolution, but you can only look at dead things. Totally different approach, totally different things that you will be seeing. You know, so there has been sort of a branch of science that started venturing into observing life as such. Okay, and that is where Wilhelm Reich was part of that stream of thought. And that stream of thought was basically deliberately killed by the emerging giants of pharma who started, I mean, the Rockefellers most prominently. They basically took over the American Medical Association in the 1930s and started shutting down all the naturopathic universities, because there was a much richer, let's call it, a blooming field of different lines of thoughts and observation, you know, and science was much more observational than dogmatic as it is now. You know, it's very quite interesting when you look at Wilhelm Reich in the context of his time. He was not so unusual, but they had to shut him down because he was successful in what he was doing. So he found, okay, sick people, gray, healthy people, blue luminescence around those red blood cells. I'm a bit fuzzy at the moment, so I should actually reread Wilhelm Reich's book on cancer, you know, and not mix up T cells and red blood cells and so on. I have to reread it. But so don't nail me down on it, or maybe your viewers will say, oh, George is like, you know, he hasn't read it. The principle is that actually made him curious. And he thought, what is this? Is it electricity, or is it an as yet to be named a miraculous life energy? And that eventually led him to postulate what he would later call orgone. That was his word creation. And that being a universal life energy. So when you look at that, and he then obviously became curious as it was part of his character. And he started, okay, if I see this energy around those blood cells, then maybe it's everywhere, maybe it's somewhere else as well, you know. And he found, ultimately, he would actually say that when we see the blue sky, we're actually seeing the orgone envelope of our planet, okay? Because when you think to the end of it, there is only one energy. There is no, you know, there is no, like, here is the word world of material things, and then there's also that energy, as if it was something added to it, okay? Essentially, orgone is what everything is made of, okay? And that is the same that the Indians call prana, or that the Chinese call qi, although that is a bad translation. Qi actually means movement, but I'm doing Tai Chi. That's why the Chinese do not equate qi with life energy. That's a Western idea, but we think it like that. But most ancient traditions have this idea of an ether. The Greeks had the ether, you know, and the French called it it's not coming now. But there's a Latin word called the fluidum, you know, or in physics, they have this idea of the zero point energy, which means that there is some movement of molecules or of things at absolute zero temperature. So if you go to the cosmic zero, zero Kelvin, theoretically nothing should move. There's no heat movement. And yet there is still movement. And that is called the zero point energy. That's kind of the ground energy of the cosmos. So it's quite interesting that even now, I forgot the name, there are people winning Nobel Prizes with new ether theories. Okay, so they're coming back to the ether. The ether was officially abandoned by modern science in the 1920s due to misinterpreted and wrongly conceived experiments. And actually, Einstein, with whom Reich also tried to correspond, by the way, but Einstein was already too arrogant then. Einstein said later he regretted that they threw out the ether because it just makes life so much easier, you know, to explain the world with an ether. So there was an experiment called the Michelson-Morley experiment that allegedly proved that there is no ether, but actually it was set up in a wrong way so that it could not see the ether. Okay, so anyway, so you could say every decent culture that ever existed on this planet had some kind of an idea of something that exists and out of which everything else is made. Right, and you can call it whatever you want. The ether, the zero point energy, the Russians had a guy called Kozirev who talked of a kind of a vortex theory, and that goes very close to Wilhelm Reich because Wilhelm Reich observed that this energy is basically moving in vortices. Everything is moving in vortices. So when you look at and he connected the galaxy basically to the subatomic, you know, and he said everything is moving in vortices. When you say the planets are moving around the sun, and now I'm sorry for the flat earthers among, I do believe that it's all kind of spiraling movements and that there is no flat plate on which everything is projected, but be that as it may. So when you believe in the universe as we are presently seeing it, you've got planets moving around a star. The star as such is moving around something else, and the whole thing is actually moving in a giant spiral called a nebula or, you know, a galaxy. You know, when you look at galaxies, they're all gigantic spirals, and all these galaxies are spiraling in a bigger spiral. Okay, so it's quite amazing. And science knows that matter doesn't exist because we keep postulating smaller and smaller subatomic particles that only exist as a theory because nobody has ever seen anything even as small as a molecule. You know, it's all basically fictional models that serve to explain the behavior of matter. You know, but we don't really know that these things exist. They exist because they leave certain traces, and we put experiments up in such a way that we then interpret these traces as quarks or pions or, you know, whatever we call these things. And then the next generation of super colliders creates even smaller traces, and then they invent a new layer of super mini subatomic particles that probably don't exist, because what really exists is that there's spiraling energy. That's how I see this. It's my Reich inspired cosmology, basically. And the thing is, it's quite amazing because it connects with another theory that I find very fascinating, and that's the expanding Earth theory. I forgot who brought it up, but if you look at the ball of the Earth, all the continents fit together almost seamlessly, plus minus a few crumple zones, on a much smaller ball. So we've all heard of the Pangaea theory, where Africa and Europe and South America were basically one piece. And we know that there is a widely held belief that the Congo once was one with the Amazon, and there were one big river and so on. So if you project that onto a much smaller ball, it actually goes like that. Okay, so now you've got a spiraling universe, spiraling body of energy that is attracting, because argon attracts more argon and it wants to densify, so it grows. So some guy has actually said that you can measure it, and that the Earth grows by 2 centimeters per year. Okay, so it's quite interesting, eh? And
yes,
that also explains another, for me, very important theory, and that's the abiotic oil theory, namely that oil is a renewable resource that is, by an as yet unknown process, so it is described, generated inside the Earth. So it's an abundant renewable resource that kind of comes out of that growth process, and it is not scarce. There's no peak oil. It's all bullshit, okay? And so oil is a renewable resource. All these things actually work together. That's for me, that's the fascinating part. Growing Earth, abundant production, probably also of other materials. You know, we know, for example, that gold is alchemically generated out of copper. Right, there are processes with certain bacteria that can shit out gold by eating copper. Okay? Some two Russian guys recently introduced that to some big financiers in Davos, and then it immediately disappeared because it would have ended the idea of gold as a scarcity thing. But we know that gold is always found next to copper. If I'm digressing too far, because we are still not talking about orgonite, you know.
Yeah, no, but this all leads to it. Everything leads to the orgone energy. 1930s, the American Medical Association, again, hats off to Eustace Mullins. I learned about that through his other book, or one of his other books, Murder by Injection. And the capture of that organization by the Rockefellers, and what?
I've never read any other books by Mullins, I must be honest. I progressed straight to the Beast from Jekyll Island, or what's it called, by Griffith, you know, and stuck with the Federal Reserve theme. So,
well, the Murder by Injection, he goes through all of that and basically lays out how and why they captured the American Medical Association to push allopathic drugs or allopathic medicine through Big Pharma, which they owned, because allopathy is, you know, a direct downstream byproduct of oil refinery, right? That's what we end up putting in our bodies. So what do you do with that waste product? And, well, you make millions from it, but you've got to capture the medical association first. And this is what this crosses with Reich and cancer, because as you were saying, he had figured out what was going on, and he was very successful, I believe. You can tell me all about this. With results with his cancer, his orgone accumulator. Do you want to explain to people what the orgone accumulator was and how it cured cancer? Because he had many excellent results. And why do we not have those right now? Like, why are we not using this?
It's easy to build them, actually. But so an orgone accumulator, so after Wilhelm Reich sort of arrived at the idea of a universal life energy, associated with healthy, cancer-free blood and the absence of that energy being darkish gray, negative, and so on. He realized that organic material had the property of absorbing this energy, and metal had the property of attracting and quickly bouncing back that material. So what he did was, I think what he first tried to do was he built little metal boxes, and he found that the concentration of argon was higher inside the box than outside, while there was no temperature difference or anything else. So then he started making boxes with layers where he put, for example, some kind of a wool or even cardboard, alternating with metal. Okay, and the more layers he added, the stronger the concentration of energy was. And then he started asking people to sit in these boxes for a while. And he found that they got so charged with energy that their cancers went into remission. Okay, so that was the breakthrough. And I think we're talking very late 40s and early 50s now. Wilhelm Reich had a bit of a grandiose aspect of him. You know, he published all these magazines and all that, and he believed that he was basically creating a new science. And he also created his own language, basically, which it makes it sometimes odd to read because the language did not live on. You know, they quelled it. They basically interrupted this whole process, and basically, like the Nazis, they burned his books. You know, it was just unbelievable. So he had these successes after, let's say, 6 weeks or so. People often had a complete remission of their cancer, but he also found that the cancer could come back because of the still underlying armoring and all these other things, you know, that had led to the cancer coming up. But the successes were significant. And then resistance started building up against him from the medical establishment. And now one very interesting thing that I discovered is that, they brought him up on charges of some violation of interstate commerce rules or some blah, blah, blah. And now you will not believe that if you haven't heard it before. The chief witness, the chief expert witness in the trial against him was one psychologist, Ewan Cameron. Now, Ewan Cameron is the father of MK Ultra.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. If you know the, I think it's the last, what's that action series with Matt Damon?
The Bourne Identity.
The Bourne Identity, the last Bourne Identity, where he meets his programmer.
Right.
You remember that?
Yes.
Or have you seen that?
Yeah.
Where he meets the guy who made him into that trauma-based mind control killing machine by drilling through his front tooth, you know, and all these kind of things, and extreme torture, which enabled him to become this programmable killer, super soldier. You know, this Ewan Cameron was actually the chief witness against Wilhelm Reich.
Wow.
So the guy, I mean, the guy in Born, I think it's Born, it's kind of like after the three main ones, you know, it came, I think it's the fourth one, where he's kind of like, now he's kind of gone through all the guys that were trying to shut him down and kill him, and then eventually he confronts his original programmer. So that is clearly molded on that Ewan Cameron.
Wow. And from what I understand,
that's the man who made American soldiers drink LSD and orange juice, you know, and who reprogrammed Germany after World War II, you know, and all these lovely things. So
And push LSD through university campuses and
But I mean, it wasn't only, I mean, LSD was the fun part of it, you know, like
Yes.
staring at goats, or what was that movie with Jeff Bridges, where they've got their special unit where they're all taking LSD and doing yoga headstands on old buses. So that was, I think, the fun part. But they did much meaner things.
So the FDA, they lock him up because
It was a minor violation. It was a technical violation of some, you know,
he was technical,
it wasn't
he
a.
was deemed to be selling commercially organ or organoid devices, and they lock him away on this technicality and gone with it, all of that information.
What happened is that he was supposed to be released. He was, I think, his sentence was something at 2.5 years or something. You know, they hadn't reached the point yet that you could be locked up for denying medical orthodoxy. So they had to find something else. In those days, many discussions were still much more open, right? It wasn't yet decided. The orthodoxy wasn't yet like today, where they can say this is unscientific if you don't agree with them, you know. So that was not what they locked him up for. They came up with something else, a trumped up charge, and he was supposed to be released, and then he died of a heart attack 2 days before his scheduled release.
Died suddenly.
Well, a piece of soap, you know, that people slip on in the shower if they're supposed to be whacked off in prison, okay? Like in the movies, you know, that's basically what happened. And then they raided his compound, and I don't know which agency was in charge of that, but they burned a lot of his stuff, you know, and so on and so on and so on. And basically drove his colleagues who had been working with him and who learned from him his methods and so on. They went underground, basically. Some of them pursued this line of research, but they got very quiet. And then basically in the 1970s, there was a renaissance of Reich. There was kind of more related to the hippie movement. People started clandestinely building organ accumulators, you know, and finding it very exciting to sit in them and so on and so on. So, yeah. And Wilhelm Reich even went further with the Cloudbuster. So the Cloudbuster was the next thing that he came up with, and that was basically an array of pipes. He put them on a turret that he could actually direct them at the sky. And his theory was that these hollow pipes went into a resonance with the organ of the sky, and that by sweeping it in a specific way, he could start moving stagnant energy. So he basically postulated that, okay, organ is universal, it's everywhere. When organ is in a stagnating state, it becomes deadly organ. That was his name for this kind of death energy. Death energy is basically stagnating organ. Okay, very similar to Chinese traditional medicine, by the way. They say, you know, when you don't have a flow through your meridians, then you get sick, and you have to stimulate it and make it flow again. So basically, but Wilhelm Reich was never, he did not really connect his own research to any of those Far Eastern concepts, you know, or even religious or metaphysical concepts. That came much later. Wilhelm Reich saw himself as a scientist in a white lab coat. He liked to, you know, he liked to be photographed in a white lab coat with in front of a microscope and so on. So there was this classical European idea of I'm a scientist, you know, and not no yoga or any of these things. They were not popular then. That was a very small group of some quirky British lords who had maybe brought some occult knowledge from India, from their colonial adventures, and practice that secretly at home, something like that. But we didn't have yoga classes in the 1960s, or in the 1940s. I think it started in the 70s, maybe, with the Beatles going to Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and getting everybody on the yoga trip, basically.
So deadly or go in energy. What makes it stagnant? What was his theory? Like, how does it become deadly or go in energy?
Interesting question. Interesting question. Because when you look at, now I'm actually speculating freely because I can't answer the question off the cuff. There is one thing that we can say nowadays that is that hard radiation creates stagnation of the ether. And that's your cell phone radiation, which is microwave radiation, your radar, your radioactive, your gamma, X-ray, all that stuff is basically bombarding the ether and creating that kind of stagnant state. Okay. That's a thing that we are seeing much more in our days. The original I believe that I don't think that Reich actually ever said it like that, but when you look at yin and yang and this kind of death and renewal cycles, that you always have death processes or decay processes and life processes. So organ energy is basically the energy that is creative, that creates order. So what is it that happens when out of a little seed that has fallen into a crack of a mountain, an elaborate tree with roots and a stem and amazing leaves and fruits and so on grows? It's a creative energy. It cannot be explained with purely chemical and mechanical processes. They try very hard. Microbiologists and all these guys have, for the last 80 years, tried to explain everything as chemical, electrical, and what have you reactions, which turns out when you think about it, they cannot explain life. They have never been able to do that. So the life process is positive organ. And eventually, it reaches a certain point where the life cannot be supported and it disintegrates. So that would be your death process, right? Which is also part of nature. Why exactly, for example? Because Reich, for example, associated desert forming with DOR, deadly organ. Whereas regreening, so he did with his Cloudbusters, he did successful experiments in regreening the Arizona desert, which were quite interesting because before he brought back precipitation, actually the green started to shoot up out of the sandy desert. And then the green started the evaporation cycle and brought back the rain clouds and brought back a more natural rainfall pattern. Now, I can't tell you if DOR is always unnatural or if it's, that's, I think not. I think it's normal that we eventually die and that things that grow eventually sort of disintegrate again and become part of a new life process. But in our technical age, like from the introduction of massive and strong electromagnetic fields, they have a very strong effect on the ether. And there are other people who said that certain disease waves coincided with the introduction of technical generations of electromagnetism. This discussion actually came up at the beginning of the corona story, where some people were saying it's actually G5 that causes these symptoms, you know, and they went back and Rudolf Steiner, the founder of anthroposophy, actually said that so that every wave of introducing electricity into our human habitat has created a certain wave of disease. For example, the great Spanish flu of 1917-1918 coincided with mass electrification of all cities.
Hmm.
Okay, and then we had the beginning of radio waves, then we had another wave of diseases. People also seem to get kind of over it, you know, and adapt to that level of overstimulation. And then it goes to the next until we hit the next level. Okay, and that is basically the massive rollout of cell phone technology, which puts a microwave emitter in our immediate neighborhood, you know, and that started maybe in the late 1990s. And then we've got the 5G, which is not exactly something new, but the thing with 5G is because they are using a higher frequency, they have less penetration through walls and they need to put 10 times as many antennas in order to go into every corner and so on. So it's not so much the frequency of it, but the ubiquitousness, you know, where you used to have two or three cell phone masts in a suburb. Now suddenly you have about 60 antennas on roofs on, you know, everywhere. And they're trying to be not further than 300 meters apart, something like that. You know? So that's where the orgonite comes now.
Right. And I want to just, if I can just pause you there, because a lot of people, they still think in terms of conspiracy theories, and 5G is just, 5G towers in particular, are an easy one for, you know, oh, you conspiracy theorist, you know, roll your eyes and move on with life. You're an idiot. You know, I've got faster Wi-Fi. I'm happy. Everything's good for me. That's yes. Pretty much like the level of people's understanding of what's going on. But mm-hmm. You know, listen to interviews with Barry Trower and watch some of his talks as well. And he talks about this at great length. And he talks about how, you know, microwaves were military grade weapons back in mm-hmm. about this back in the 40s, 50s.
Yes.
And the microwaves that are emitted from these things are, you know, that they are creating deadly orgone energy. And especially a microwave oven, please, we don't have one in our house. Listeners, please.
Good on you.
Right.
On you. Yeah.
Those things, just anecdotal story, a friend of
mine. Basically doing to your food what a neutron bomb does.
Yeah, right? I know. It's crazy. A friend of mine used to run an electric shop, and he told me this. He's like, we used to have a meter, and whenever we fixed a television or a radio or anything like that, we would have to test how much frequency it was putting out. It had to be under a certain guideline. Otherwise, we'd have to take the thing apart again and, you know, reseal it. Perhaps it wasn't resealed. There were no guidelines on microwaves. And if you took one of those readers to a microwave, it would just go off the scale.
Absolutely. And
he would be like, huh? How are there no regs on microwaves? But mm-hmm. yeah, I can't send a television out if it's something like that. Sent him down some rabbit holes mm-hmm. himself. So these things are without doubt bad for our health, deadly organology. And the 5G towers have been multiplying like crazy over the last 4 years, especially during lockdown. There was huge rollouts mm-hmm. of 5G cell towers, or even in the UK, I think they're putting them in lampposts. New lampposts were going in.
Yeah, they're getting smaller and smaller because higher frequency uses smaller panels, so they're more easily hidden.
Right.
And I'm sure you've also got the fake fir trees and so on. We've also got fake cactuses and fake palm trees.
No way.
That are hiding. Yeah, they're trying to make it look natural, you know. Or they paint.
Okay.
They used to paint them in a brick pattern. They put like the panels next to some chimney and then painted the panels with a brick pattern, so you don't see it if you don't really look for it.
Hmm.
And now I think they're getting shameless and they're just putting them everywhere. You know, they don't have time for camouflage anymore. They're,
Exactly. When I drive around where we are living now, I can't stop seeing them. And even my son is like, look, Daddy, there's another tower. So let's just say these things, bad. How and what your work, what you've been doing a great deal of over the last 20 years or so, especially in Africa, that's what your book was about, is busting these towers. Now, some people might think, oh, he's taking a chainsaw to them. Like, no, it's much simpler than that. Do you want to talk about now the orgonite and what that does to deadly orgone energy and the effect that it has?
So orgonite is basically a further development of Wilhelm Reich's discovery of this layering of different materials. So orgonite is essentially a mixture of resin and fine metal filings, which should be sort of like laminar or foil-like. So that you have as many as possible border interfaces between these two different materials. What happens is, so when you have a piece of such a metal and resin mix, it does that, the resin is the organic compound here, and that's not organic in the sense of biological, but in the sense of organic chemistry, carbon-based chemistry, and metal. And it attracts and then multiply rebounces and thereby accelerates the energy. So when you put one of these orgon pieces, orgonite pieces, we call them tower busters, they are basically made in a muffin pan and they have these metal filings soaked and embedded in resin. And we are adding, for added benefit, we are adding some crystals to that as well. They have the effect of transmuting the field that people see around these towers, okay? And that is now a very interesting effect. People have observed, and now I'm talking about people who are able to see auras, of whom there are quite many, and one can learn it also. They say that a typical cell phone tower, when it is not treated, has a kind of anthracite gray aura around it, which extends about half a kilometer. And it looks like almost like a flat melon, which means it is a vortex. It's doing something like that. It's like a torus. It's like a toroidal field that goes around that tower, which is dark. It's a dark energy. When you put that innocent little tower buster, that harmless little thing that nobody would ever think that it can do anything, because it's just basically a piece of plastic with metal filings in it, this thing changes. And it changes in such a way that the blackness is still coming out of those panels, but it stops after maybe 1 or 2 meters. And that torus field is now becoming colorful. And what we have documented on our many trips where we've done this over large areas is that you also see immediate changes in the sky. That is for the non-aura seeing people like myself. I'm only seeing very little of energy directly, but I've observed a lot of amazing changes in the sky. So when you have that massive door field everywhere from all these towers, which is basically over the whole area, your sky tends to look flat. It tends to look like a soup. You know, it's almost two-dimensional. It doesn't give you that beautiful cumulus clouds, you know, thunderheads and wonderful sculptural clouds that are typically associated with an orgone-rich living sky. So what we find is when we do this busting, as we call it, or you can also call it gifting, depends, you know, busting sounds a bit aggressive, sounds like chainsaw massacre, you know, chopping the tower off and so on. It's not necessary. We're actually enjoying the effects of fast Wi-Fi and all that. You know, we're all on the internet like we are now. I'm not a machine stormer, but I'm a machine transformer, let's call it that way. So we are trying to transmute that negative field into a life-enhancing positive field. And we've done gifting expeditions in 10 African countries. We've done this in spot-wise in European countries when we visited in Germany, Austria, Poland, Switzerland, Holland, not in France, but there are other people who do this as well, of course. And we've done it in Russia. We've done it in some parts of America, spot-wise only when we visited, in Hong Kong, in mainland China, and so on and so on. And especially in Africa, we could observe the effects on a grand scale, you know, where we often actually went to intervene when there was a major drought. You know, droughts, we believe that when the, let's call it the coordinated prestitutes are saying that scientists are expecting a drought, we actually translate that and say they are planning a drought. So they're putting their microwave things on full whack, and they are supporting that with chemtrails and a few other things that they do. And they've got like macro atmospheric heaters that many people know under the name of HARP, but HARP is only one visible, you know, institution in Alaska. But there are many such places. And what we basically found is that the network of cell phone towers as such is working as a kind of HARP. Okay, so it can work to create targeted beams that are heating specific parts of the ionosphere and thereby redirect jet streams and change the macro weather. So a lot of that has been happening in the Middle East lately, where the rich Arab countries have actually ordered weather modification in their favor in order to do massive desert greening, which went a little bit out of control, and they suddenly had super floods like in Cairo, you know, or in Jeddah, you know, or whatever. But the sheikhs actually ordered the weather modification, and it's done by creating superheated spots in the ionosphere by triangulating several beams, and you can point them onto one thing, and then you create a pressure, and then the jet stream takes a turn, right? And then you get a drought in Central Europe, and you get unexplainable freak rainfalls in the Middle East. And the guys are happy, happy, happy. Now suddenly they've got water in the desert, you know, and they can graze their camels or start making permaculture or whatever they're planning to do, you know. So sorry, I'm digressing a little bit, but it's all unfortunately that's the thing.
Yeah, so I'll pause you there, and we'll go back to 5G, microwave, and HARP. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think a lot of people kind of get stuck on. And chemtrails, we'll come back to that. Because another one, that's like the wildest trigger word at the moment, I think.
I know.
It's unbelievable. People, they just want to shut you down. The minute you say chemtrail, you're like an idiot.
Sorry, but they're there. But they can be observed. I don't even know who does it. You know, I know all the theory about it, but I can't pin it down. And I don't know if those photos of tankers with all these chemicals are real or photoshopped, or, you know, I can't prove it. Mm-hmm. But they are there.
They are there. And this is the thing, you know, that people think, some people come at this as, you know, everything's a lie and we have to, you know, be very critical in our thinking. Other people, I like to come at it like everything's a half truth, which is much more damaging than a straight out lie, because just given the half truths, and then they can carry on, whoever's like coordinating this weather modification or manipulation, whatever you want to call it, can then carry on under guise, it's for climate change research. and all of this other nonsense. And as for Dubai and Oman this year, where people died because of the ridiculous amounts of rain that it suffered,
yes.
Just a year ago, yeah, they were signing $100 million deals to fly over 100 cloud seeding missions in 2024. This is all documented.
Mm-hmm.
And there was pictures and videos of them signing the contracts. And it's like, guys, yeah, they're doing this. How can nobody see it? It's driving me crazy that nobody wants to even have these discussions. But HAARP, people get lost with HAARP. I got lost with HAARP because with HAARP, I think of the place in Alaska that has all of the giant antennae and whatever else. But for people who are wondering, let's just, HAARP stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program.
Yes.
This was where it first happened in Alaska. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying and what I'm beginning to understand is any of these 5G towers have the ability to shoot the microwave frequencies mm-hmm. into the air, and
yes.
they can be coordinated and triangulated to affect the weather. Now that's, I mean, what nation state wouldn't want that power? And when you kind of like follow that thinking, I think it's going to help unlock people's minds because
I don't think this is coordinated on a sovereign nation state. I think this is the underground deep state that does these things,
which would make and that sense.
Keep the knowledge compartmentalized and does not. So you can be an electronic engineer actually installing these towers and planning these networks, and you know fuck all about
yep.
that you will use.
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken to a guy who was very deep involved as a mercenary and secret operative in the deep state in Africa. And he said that he was in control rooms underground where they are sitting and playing with the weather. And he was an elite watchman there. Now, I can't prove or disprove this. You know, the thing is that we act on the assumptions. I have to introduce an idea here, and that is the idea of suspended disbelief.
Mm.
Because we could have endless discussions with skeptics who would want me to prove each and every one of my assertions here. And we could waste a lot of energy, and I'm not interested in that. So what I'm saying is that I work on the assumptions that the cell phone towers are harmful, and I see the changes that happen when I give them. That is for me enough motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have other such suspended disbelief, and all the other theories, I know about them, but I'm not pronouncing on them that they are the ultimate truth or whatever. I'm aware of a lot of theories, okay, which I'm keeping in that status of suspended disbelief, waiting for further pointers that would either prove or disprove them. And I think that's the only rational way for me to deal with that information. Doesn't matter. A lot of people are saying that there are alien underground bases in all kinds of places and that they interact in another dimensional way, you know, and so on and so on. What I'm doing is I put aragonite there. Yes, it could be true, it could be not true. I've been traveling with people who say that they perceive these things, okay? There are people who perceive things that we normally do not perceive, and they've pointed me to special points, and I've gifted them, and I had interesting experiences there. But I cannot say this is proof that little gray men actually live there and that we made them go away by putting the aragonite there. But I'm acting on faith sometimes. I'm acting on suspended disbelief. And I think that's my freedom. You know, I don't try to prove anything or get into endless. In the beginning of my so-called career as an Orgon warrior, I did even follow invitations to have discussions about chemtrails with the chief weather forecaster of the South African Weather Service. You know, it was quite interesting. Because we did kind of talk. he was a very well-schooled rhetoric guy, probably Freemason. you know, and he kind of managed to talk over me without answering any of my questions. Mm. And I then introduced my ideas without answering his question. And it was quite funny. But I did that in the beginning, but I've stopped to interact with academia, you know, or I'm not interested. They can do their thing. I have my certain ideas of what's wrong with organized science, you know, and if I meet them at a party and we're in a relaxed mood, we can have a discussion about that. But I'm not willing to get into discussions about, is this real? Are chemtrails real? Are they not real? Surely they are real because they were not there when I was a child. I remember looking at the sky. My grandfather explained to me that jets make water vapor because they are putting hot air into cold frozen thing. And then basically the water condenses and it stays on for about 2 minutes. Okay, he explained all that to me. And that was also what I remember observing. But now you have these patterns in the sky of crisscrossing trails that do not go away, you know, and there are several layers, and then they become that diffused kind of fog, you know, that and so on and so on. Now, interestingly, it gets even more spooky. The Cloudbuster does kind of eat these chemtrails. Okay, so what does it do now? We don't really know what it does, because people who are trying to explain everything in a old-fashioned mechanistic way say, okay, if the Cloudbuster does something with these chemtrails, then surely all the gunk that they've sprayed in the air that must now come down and become very dangerous and toxic and so on. You know, the barium and aluminium and whatever is in there. And some people have taken samples of precipitation and actually have been able to name the elements that are in there. Plus, there are also patents about weather modification. All these things are actually published as patents, you know, and there are papers that exist about written by the American Air Force about controlling the weather in 25 years. These memorandums were published in the 1990s, okay, or even earlier. So, I mean, all these things are actually in patents. They do exist. But what we think what's actually happening when the Orgon Cloudbuster is breaking up the chemtrails is that it's actually creating a transmutation of these materials into harmless water vapor. It's again, it's alchemy. It's what I said earlier about everything is energy. Copper turns into gold. Barium oxide turns into something else, you know, because we've seen these changes. I mean, we've seen it again and again.
Mm-hmm. As you document in the book.
Yeah, I mean, even in that book is now, that is from 2007, and I only started the whole Orgonite journey in 2002. Since then, we've done another 16 years of Orgon activity, you know, which I think I should actually write a sequel to that book or update it or something. So we've seen it so often, you know, and we've never seen any negative effects. The only thing that we've seen is a return of healthy natural rainfall patterns, of unprecedented rainfalls in Namibia, of droughts that were not happening, although there was a big run-up to a major drought in northern Zimbabwe and Zambia, and they said 10 million people will die of hunger, you know what? So we bust all the towers there, and nothing happens instead. Wonderful rainfall, you know, or Malawi was getting so much rain that they started planting winter crops, which they had never done before, you know, and obviously, we can't really go directly and take credit for this, but the funny thing is it sort of tends to always happen that way and not the other way around. Okay, that's the thing. We can't really go and because there's no way that you could organize a controlled experiment where you say, okay, let me just keep one country completely fucked up with uninterrupted microwave hammering, you know, and the other country, we put massive orbonite, and then we, you know, then they would say, oh, but there was the weather system Hugo, you know, that came over, and, you know, and you can't, at least unless you are basically all state actors would basically combine to do such an experiment, you know, and I was at some point actually hoping that I could get somebody like Muammar Gaddafi to allow me to green his desert. And I think I had kind of an indirect contact through the Libyan ambassador in Lesotho. And I think they read my book, and that's basically when Gaddafi was murdered and Libya was bombed to smithereens. Gaddafi was open to these ideas, you know. He was greening the desert with the great underground river and all these things, and his biggest crime was basically that he wanted to introduce a gold currency, the gold dinar. There are still archived versions of the UNICEF website where it was stated that Libya had the second highest human development index in Africa before the overthrow of Gaddafi. You know, everybody got a few promille of the oil revenues directly attributed to their account. If you wanted to study overseas, and that was where the problem started, because they sent all these young Libyans to America to study at the Ivy League universities, and there they became indoctrinated and burned around. And I think that's where the downfall is. But they sent all their guys overseas to study at mostly English and American universities, $2,000 stipend, you know, for your living expenses, plus all other academic fees, all paid, you know, nice life. When you married, you got $50,000, you know, and a plot of land and help to build a house, you know, that kind of. So that was the ugly, brutal dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi. And then the US and the French, and luckily not the Germans in that one instance, because we had learned from Yugoslavia that it was not a good thing to do, and just bombed the country to smithereens. And it's still there. It's still, you know, it's a strife-torn, destroyed country.
Ugh.
In the name of democracy. Wonderful. Okay. So I'm digressing, but I was thinking it would be great if somebody like Gaddafi, you know, if you could just tell him, listen, dude, I mean, you've got so much oil revenues. If you give me $5 million to play with and a military escort and a few big helicopters, and we just plant a cloudbuster every 50 kilometers in your desert and throw a tower buster out of the helicopter every 2 kilometers in a grid, I'm sure your desert would be overwhelmingly flourishing with green. Okay, that's an experiment that I would still love to do. But I don't see the state actor that's willing to provide that kind of funding and military escort for me at the moment.
And people, like you said, you can make these things yourself. So what I want people to do is kind of get mobilized. They can go to your website and buy the tower busters. Yes. They're just like a hockey puck, basically. And you just go and place them under the tower that's closest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that around like your town and whatever else, that's going to start making a big difference to the skies above you. It's going to turn that deadly organ into positive. You'll start seeing, you know, more of the beautiful, great big cumulus clouds and things that is missing our skies, especially, I mean, like Southwest France, man, we're getting hammered with all of this stuff at the moment. It's June. It's the longest day of the year. And I think it's like 16 degrees outside. And for the cloud buster, so people are understanding, a cloud buster is like 4 or 5 copper pipes. Again, we can buy the kit from you.
Actually, always 6. So
six. Okay. Yes. Interesting.
There seems to be a magic number. I don't know, because the carbon crystal is also six, it's also a hexagon, you know. So the six seems to work much nicer. Essentially, you can have a cloudbuster by sticking any sort of pipe, a metal pipe, into a big piece of orgonite and having a crystal at the bottom. Okay? The crystal at the bottom works as a transmitter and accelerates the energy exchange between the pipe that is going in resonance with the sky and the orgonite that transmutes the energy. Okay, that is our innovation vis-a-vis Wilhelm Reich, who just had the pipes and he could only draw the energy. Now we are drawing it and sending it back refreshed. So our thing is much more foolproof. The Wilhelm Reich thing needed to be expertly operated. You needed to have a guy that knows what he's doing. And so it was much more, it was not really made for home use, okay, the Reich technology. Cloudbuster, Orgonite Cloudbuster is much easier. It's basically 1.80 meter pipe length. So for those who are still thinking in feet and inches, it's a 6 feet length, and the pipe diameter is 28 millimeter. Normally, we use copper pipes because they have a nicer, warmer energy. But people who are on a low budget have also used aluminium pipes and even steel pipes. I think it's not working as nicely, but it will also work. So we kind of always use copper. And that thing doesn't really need to be expertly, it cannot actually do anything harmful. The only thing it does, it draws bad energy in and changes the sky. So we have documented it thousands of times. We can see how actually the blackness in the sky is almost like drawn into it for the first day or so. And then it becomes blacker, blacker, blacker. And then the sky starts to look sparkling. You get that, I don't know, that kind of feeling that it's almost like little champagne bubbles. You know, it's sky changes its character. When we put up our first cloudbuster ever, so that was when I had started communicating with Don Croft. And Don Croft is actually the guy who took the idea of the orgonite, of that material, and combined it with the Wilhelm Reich cloudbuster by making a large piece of orgonite in a bucket and sticking those six pipes in. And that's basically, Don Croft is basically the instigator, you could say. Ah, lovely, 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 lovely. Let's see what we have here. Okay, so this is a power buster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the kind of nice, colorful version where we have smooth surfaces that we use inside the house. And we've got the rough ones where there can be some filings sticking out and so on. And we normally make them green because we like to throw them out of the driving car while we are passing a tower buster, or in the more well-kept and urban environments, we have to step out and hide them in a bush, you know. But when we go over land, we can just actually throw them out where you have greenery or something. And then we've got many little beautiful derivatives. We've got nice pyramids, you know, that you can put in your house. We've got special things that you can use on your smart meters because they're also little microwave emitters.
Yes, anyone with smart meters at home, please get one of these things.
Here, this is our so-called Muti series. Muti in Southern Africa is woo-woo, juju, traditional African medicine. So this has in it several herbs that Africans traditionally use to ward off negative spirits and spiritual influences and to create prosperity and health. So we feel that orgonite can act as a transmitter of information. Okay, so that's the next level. The first level is transmute stagnant energy, busting towers, and so on. You can use a very, very crude orgonite. It can be really like any sweepings from the floor of any machine working factory, your next guy that makes aluminium windows, you know, his floor sweepings will be just fine. Just take the cigarette butts out, you know, because it's even if there's some dirt in it, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't really, so that can be very crude. And then obviously we like to have things that we pendant, we make pendants that we can hang around our neck that protect us when we are moving through highly electro-contaminated. So there's many applications of Orgonite, but the basis the mini always shield. Remains the same.
This is
so
the one that I have for
that's
my
also why
phone.
Do you want to explain to people? When they get on our website and they say, okay,
yes, that's one of yours. Yeah,
products.
I bought the mini
Which
shield,
one should
the
I
5G
take?
Mini shield.
My answer is you can't really go wrong. Okay, because the basic function of Orgonite is always the same. It's always the same transmutation of stagnant energy to living energy. But now we are adding traditional healing stones, you know, where there is an experiential knowledge of what stone is great, you know, to stimulate your attentiveness for higher spiritual energies. There are stones that are good for your blood circulation, like ruby or, you know, or granite or other stones. There is a lot of knowledge about this that's been collected over hundreds of years. And we are using these stones and even herbal medicines because we feel that the subtle vibration or the information of these stones is amplified and carried by the orgonite. Almost comparable to a radio transmission where you have a carrier wave and then you modulate. You can modulate punk rock, or you can modulate Mozart, or you can have an interview with whoever, you know. So information travels on top of that bass wave, basically. Okay, so that's where the orgonite becomes a bit more of a healing art when you start combining it with other things. Okay, but also, we must not overemphasize this, that is important for our personal healing, for our what we wear on our body, what we want to put in our house. But for the large or environmental work, it is much more important to keep it simple, simple and cheap. You know, you don't want to put a sophisticated pyramid with all the bells and whistles at every cell phone tower because you would run out of budget very quickly.
Yeah, exactly. These things, they become expensive unless you're making them at home en masse, which
you can make them at home, and we encourage that. We have some videos also how we make tower busters and so on. So obviously our products are more expensive because we have distribution to pay for and shipping, and we have to pay people to work for us. But you can make simple tower busters yourself. You buy yourself 12 muffin pans, put them on a table, and get 3 buckets of metal filings, and get 25 liters of clear casting resin and catalyst. And if you're not shy to get a bit dirty, then go for it. You know, it's actually fun. And maybe you still want to buy one or two of our nice pyramids.
So the last thing I want to talk about here, George, is the Zappa.
Oh my God, now we are entering a whole different story.
Oh yes, okay. And yes. This is something, so here's the inside of it for people that are watching, but let's do it. Let's talk about the Zappa. Let's talk about Don.
Have we talked enough about Orgonite? Are you sure?
Yes.
I guess so. All right, okay.
So onto the Zappa and what it does, how you come to learn about it, and why it's not being more widely used in medical practice.
Yeah, okay. That brings us back to the Rockefellers and their control of the medical establishment. But okay, the Zappa, I learned about the Zappa also from Don Croft. So I have to say this man is an overwhelmingly powerful source of inspiration. He's unfortunately passed away a few years ago. The zapper was originally promoted by Dr. Huldah Clark, a microbiologist who wrote a book called The Cure for All Diseases, in which she explains that basically all disease, and it's a simplification, of course, but all disease is caused by either bacteria or parasites or cancerous growth, okay, which are all kind of disease tissues that thrive in a, oh my God, I see my laptop battery is low. Change, I need to get plugged in somehow. See, I've got a support team here, beautiful.
Yeah.
Parasites, totally underestimated by conventional medicine. The average American has about 1 pound of creepy crawlies in their body. And that is different larvae stage of some kind of critters that live in our intestines and that drill themselves into under the skin, and they can be in the brain and they can be in all kinds of places, okay? Mm. The parasites themselves contain a shitload of bacteria, who in turn, when they disintegrate, release a shitload of viruses, okay? And then you've got cancer cells, which are basically cells that grow wild because of, Wilhelm Reich would say, stagnating energy, but Huldah Clark would say some toxic process or something. You know, there are different ways of looking at things, and they often, depending on what angle you're looking from, you see different things. But we're all coming to the same realization that most disease processes are rather simple. So it's bad stuff out, good stuff in. You know, that's the basic principle. And how do you get the bad stuff out? One of the ways of getting it out is zapping, because what a zapper does, and it's not frequency based. People misunderstand that. They think that's where Royal Rife came in, you know, who had this thing about the resonance frequencies that kill pathogenic organisms. Our zappers are not based on resonance. Our zappers use a very low frequency of 15 hertz, 15 pulses per second. And they're basically pulsing a direct current into the body, which means you have two poles and it's only flowing in one direction and you switch it on and off via an electronic circuit, a very simple electronic circuit. The same effect could be achieved by tapping onto a car battery. People have done that to cure snake bite. Yes. So a car battery or a jumper cable in the desert, when you get bitten by a snake, it's a known remedy. If you do it quickly, you can disintegrate the venom. Okay? So diseased organisms or necrotic tissue thrives in a electron-starved environment, meaning it's a positive charge, okay, a positive ionization. Hmm. The zapper causes a negative ionization. And that negative ionization is what these pathogenic organisms don't like. So they shrivel up and die. And that, interestingly, goes for the parasites, it goes for the harmful bacteria, and it's not for the nice bacteria that we need in order to digest our food, because they're not part of the necrotic environment. And it does also go for cancer cells. And that's where we are now in dangerous territory, because if you say something like that, let's hope that the you know, the controllers are not, have already lost their patience and switched off here. but it does disintegrate these cells, okay? And yeah, that's basically it. And so Huldah Clark, on page 14 of her important first book, says that every frequency works, okay? Anything from 10 hertz to 20,000 hertz, as long as it is pulse direct current, or she calls it a positive offset square wave. That sounds very complicated and technical, but it basically means that the wave only goes in one direction. It does not alternate polarity. Okay. So there's another concept of electromedicine called the Robert Beck zapper, which uses a very high voltage, 37 volt, and it changes polarity and works at a frequency of 4 hertz. In that case, he counts on the shock effect. You know, it's a different concept, but it has its adherence, but it hasn't really gotten a very wide proliferation. So our zapper exists as a clandestine product that is flying under the radar. We cannot make any health claims, obviously. In the beginning of my career, I was much more optimistic with that, you know, because I had the great honor of visiting the mother of our then president Thabo Mbeki in her rural home, you know, and I gave her a zapper, and she was over the moon because of her arthritis that had sort of gotten a lot better and so on. And she actually, I know from other sources that she was talking to the top ANC guys of the time about it, you know, and I did all the time expect that black limousine with the dark windows to roll up, you know, and Mr. President wants to talk to you. Never happens, of course. You know, then we had the big, we had here in Africa, the boundaries against challenges to the scientific paradigm are not as strong, you know, because people do feel what works, and they're not so much informed by this academic thing. So we had this whole big story about AIDS in South Africa. I don't know if you followed that in any way. You know, we had the health minister, Manto Tshabalala Msimang, who was finding, she learned about a method of curing AIDS naturally with garlic, lemon, and olive oil, okay, which was promoted by one lady called Tina van der Maas, whom I know personally. And it worked like a bomb, you know, but the medical establishment crushed down on her character, assassinated Manto Tshabalala Msimang, so that she actually died very early. And I mean, I don't think they drove her to suicide, but they basically murdered her on a social reputational level. And forced Thabo Mbeki to resign. I mean, the only thing that Thabo Mbeki had ever done was to call for a scientific panel of 5 AIDS skeptics and 5 orthodox, and to have them hash it out. You know, then 2 or 3 of the AIDS skeptics died in car crashes. That was when I realized that a president is powerless in his own country. Made him look like an idiot, okay? The guy, highly intelligent. No, he wasn't a puppet. He was actually daring to ask some real questions and make some quite intelligent suggestions to actually get to the bottom of the story. Okay, and they pushed him out. Get him off the chessboard and give him $10 billion in a foundation that he can play with, you know, so that he doesn't become a nuisance, okay? Because that's what they normally do with politicians. They create a foundation and put money into that foundation, and then they can have their private academy for future excellent leaders, you know, whatever.
So a pawn piece is a better analogy. Just get them off the chessboard.
Yes.
So the zapper, just so people know, it's just a small little box, which I've actually got strapped onto my calf muscle. That's where I've been. It's been zapping away whilst we've been talking, so an hour and 40 minutes. I don't feel a thing. I don't feel any kind of electrical pulse or anything like that. But what I understand it's doing...
Does it not tickle you at all?
No.
Then there's maybe something wrong with your zapper.
You think?
I hope not. It should be tickling.
Well, it should be. I should be feeling a little tingle.
You should feel a tingle. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's check it out if it's really working, eh?
All right. Well, we'll talk about that.
I hope you haven't got a dud. That would be terrible.
Well, yes. We can talk about that afterwards because my son thinks.
Oh, maybe you've got very thick skin. That's also a possibility.
Possible. But yeah. The way I understand it's working is that direct current that's being slowly pulsed into my bloodstream is going to find, this Zoom with these balloons things is just like ridiculous. Anyway, it's going to kill the harmful bacteria and the parasites. So those people, because gut health out there at the moment is a big kind of buzzword in the alternative health space, isn't it? You know, improve your gut health. I mean, this would do that, like, for sure.
Yes and no, okay? I have to say that the big intestine works a bit like a Faradayan cage.
Right.
And protects the larvae stage and worms that are in the intestine to a certain degree from the zapping. Okay, so normally, I mean, the Holder-Clark protocol always combines zapping with an anti-parasite herbal tincture that you would take at the same time to address the ones that are actually in your great intestine. But the zapper with our low frequency goes deeper into the intestine than any of the zappers with higher frequencies. So you do catch them to a certain degree, but I'd always recommend that you take some kind of tincture, wormwood, walnut shell extract, and various other things that can be combined. You can also take ivermectin, or you can take conventional deworming pills, which is the chemical bomb, you know, but they also work against, you know, to basically kill the ones that are in your gut.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the zapper as such is not really enough to address the gut completely. And I would definitely recommend that you rather go with the herbal tinctures than with the chemical deworming, because it will probably kill a lot of good flora as well. Okay, so that is that story. But people have parasites under the skin. They sometimes, after zapping, people said that they had little white worms coming out under the eyes.
What?
You know, and they were like, yes.
Wow.
Or through the skin. I mean, that's extreme. That's extreme. People who are living from junk food entirely, you know, also what happens is that all your household chemicals that people are dealing with, they are the solvents in there are lowering the barrier of the intestine. So the parasites that normally go through our digestive tract, because we get them in with the food, they go out directly with the excrement and they don't bother us much. Okay. But now with all the household chemical solvents, the gut becomes porous and they start invading other body cavities and start migrating into other places. Okay, so that's part of the real problem. And that also leads us to back to the cell phone towers and all that, and to the phenomenon of electrohypersensitivity. I'm sure that you've talked to people who are super sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. And they say that they feel like it's crawling under their skin when they, you know, when there's even a modem in the living room, you know, they appear to be totally over the top. But they are right there, because it's the electromagnetic radiation that stimulates those parasites, and they do start becoming hyperactive under their skin. So there is actually something crawling under their skin. It's not just a feeling. Okay, so that's where zapping also comes in, to help those people who are electro-hypersensitive to get rid of their unwanted passengers, which will then also make them more normal in terms of reacting to radiation in the room.
Mm.
I'm sure you know these people who have the silver woven garments, you know, in order to be in a permanent Faradayan cage.
No.
Maybe they don't, in the Dordogne, maybe they're not You know, the atmosphere is, I mean, in the big cities, you've got that group of people, you know, and they would love to switch off all cell phone networks and actually chop down all the cell phone towers and so on. So quite a bit of suffering there, and if they don't know that they can actually help themselves with the zapper, it's understandable that they say, let's get rid of this whole thing, you know.
All right, George, it's almost 2 hours we've been talking, so we wrap it up, but I want to make sure people, get to your website. So if people are interested in learning about more, they can order your book there, and it's Orgonize, so orgoniseafrica.com. But you have a European
Yes.
website as well, because I've been ordering these things, and you.
Actually, we've changed that now. We've migrated. Yeah, it was too complicated. We have migrated onto the Shopify platform because it's a lot more user-friendly and navigation-friendly. And now all the websites are unified again, but automatically the website will notice where you are and will up the right currency and what have you. So it's all one website, organizeafrica.com, organizeafrica.eu, and organizeafrica.co.za for the South African site. But they're all now pointing towards the same website.
Excellent. I'll put the link in the show notes and people can find that.
And the crypto payment is a bit hidden because Shopify has its own payment method, you know. So when you do the checkout, you must actually click on other payment methods. And
Yes.
then comes up an interface called Now Payments, which allows you to use crypto. And we are very happy. We love crypto. I'm going to keep some of it to hope that it will accelerate
Keep
soon.
the Bitcoin. Anything else you get, just convert to Bitcoin and
Yes,
you'll be good
yes.
for
Yeah, I'm
sure.
sure I will.
All right, George. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for, your work and educating me through your book and through this conversation. I'm going to be out there busy gifting Orgonites to the towers around the closest.
I'm going to send you a package. I'm going to send you a package
Wonderful. Thank you.
for your immediate village, and then you must watch the DIY video and start making your own.
Yes, that's the next.
But in the end, when you get serious about it, you will want to make your own Tower Busters. You know, you can still get some nice amulets from us or some pyramids, also more fun for us to make. And make your bulk Orgonite for gifting. You should actually start making that yourself.
And get some friends making it and get out there on
Absolutely.
weekends and have some fun busting towers and
It's a way of exploring the landscape in a totally new way. You know, it's a justification for drifting through the landscape from tower to tower, and you get to places that you would have never visited. You know, it's actually a road movie in the making.
And you're outside with friends, right? That's the best thing. And
Yes, and you meet interesting people. I mean, we've met the most amazing people through our work.
excellent.
I
Thanks.
could tell many more stories. I know the attention span is exhausted now.
I will talk to you just after I press stop recording. So I'll just do that now, and thank you again for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
And thank you everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed that one with George. Many different rabbit holes that we went down there. And apologies, it turns out that my mic wasn't being picked up on my side. And going back, and I've just heavily edited that to try and clean it up as much as I can. And I know you sound lovers out there and engineers are going to be very disappointed with my efforts. But believe me, we're all just plebs trying to do our best out here in the wild world of podcasting from a spare room in your house. Honestly, apologies for any sound quality issues there. But the message is clear. There's something else going on that has been hidden from us. This is why we are calling this Stolen Science, and Wilhelm Reich and his work completely stolen from us. Burnt down, much like Tesla's work as well,
and I'm sure stolen and kept for those that that wanted it the most. So look into this. Honestly, it's really been blowing my mind. I've been going down this rabbit hole with a couple of good Bitcoin friends, and yeah, we've all got these Organite pieces and we're experimenting with them. Really very interesting when you see the results firsthand for yourself. Just having them around the house, putting like the little ones underneath the smart meter, if you have one of those things in your home, really dirty electricity. Get one in your kitchen, especially if you've got a microwave, or consider just getting rid of that thing altogether. Get one near your router, your Wi-Fi router, and any other electrical emitting things that you have around the house, under like your Wi-Fi extenders or repeaters as well. Good place to put them. Yeah, and just see what happens. Like, it doesn't downgrade your Wi-Fi. It's not going to block Wi-Fi. It just, like George says, it turns that negative energy. It takes it, sucks it in almost, and pumps out positive orgone energy. We have noticed a difference. So have the people that have been playing around with this as well, and I'm sure you will too. So get over to Orgone Africa. The link will be in the show notes. Get yourself some shipped over and just start playing around with them. There's more on this coming as well, because there's another guy based out of the US called Mitch the Orgone Donor, who's been doing this as long as George, most likely. No, not as long as George, but probably as much as George. He's been going absolutely crazy. And he's been using earth pipes, which I'm not sure we talked about on this show, but there is... Again, there's ways that we can combat this negative energy EMF field and make yourself feel better. The Zapper as well, go and check that out on George's website. Really important piece of kit that could change your life for the better as well. What's the downside of trying it? And it's not that expensive. Right, before we close out, make sure you are checking out the show sponsors, doing your own research, whether that is with where to stack sats, how to store your sats with a hardware wallet, and multi-sig. You've now got OnRamp. Get over to onrampbitcoin.com. Use the code BITTEN there when you're doing your own research, or just give the guys an email, get in contact, ask them what their service is and whether or not it is right for you. We also have mempool.space. Thank you for everything that Mempool are doing. They now have a donor page where you can get something back. You can support Mempool Space and their work. It's an open source project. But instead of you just sending them sets, they're going to send you some swag back, and they have some of the best merch in the game. So get over to mempool.space, sign up to become a donor if that's what you are looking for, and stack your sats. Swan Bitcoin in the US, Relay across Europe, Bitbox for your hard cold storage, and Zaprite if you want to start accepting Bitcoin, invoicing and accounting for Bitcoin for your goods and services. Look out for Plan B, more educational content coming your way from the guys there in Nagano, and the conference is there towards the back end of October. And check out the Bitcoin Advisor guys. If you need any help, get over to Bitcoin Advisor, hit the link in the show notes, tell them I sent you, use the code BITTEN. See you on Orange Pill app if you download it. Just ping me a message. Always happy to hang with plebs there as well. Welcome them to the app and just get in touch. Thank you for everybody if you are listening on Fountain app and streaming some sats over there, boosting messages. It's great fun to see what people are talking about after listening to these shows. That's it. Catch you on the next one.